You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. This episode is brought to you by the Racehorse Owners Association, by Thoroughbred Racing Commentary's Global Rankings in partnership with the Saudi Cup, and by the Fitzdares Club. Good morning, welcome to the show. Friday, April the 16th, and it's the first day today of the Greenham meeting at Newbury and of the Scottish National meeting at Ayr here in the UK. And they will conclude on Sunday. So there's a rest day tomorrow, Saturday, to pay respects to His Royal Highness the Duke of Edinburgh, whose funeral it is tomorrow afternoon. So more classic clues potentially today, one of the last big staying chases of the season Sunday, and more classic clues then as well. And of course, there have been clues all week on Newmarket's Rowley Mile, where Lydia Hislop has been for the last 2 days. We saw a Godolphin 1-2 in the Craven Stakes yesterday, Master of the Seas beating La Barossa. They've had a very, very good week, and in a few moments' time I'll be talking to their trainer, Charlie Appleby. But Lydia, first of all, is Master of the Seas now a horse that needs to be taken very seriously for the 2,000 guineas?
I definitely think he is. I was impressed with how William Buick rode him. The horse isn't the most straightforward, although William was playing it down immediately afterwards. He's a horse that has pulled too hard. He pulled his chance away in the National Stakes last year. He still managed to hit the front, but he was swallowed up in the closing stages. Again, on his seasonal debut in Dubai, he was at pains to be settled in the early part of the race, which meant that Naval Crown, his stable companion, got away at the front part of the race. So there were lots of things potentially against Master of the Seas. It was evidently has a lot of quality. But he became a bit edgy in the paddock before William got on board. He was better going to post, and in the race he settled better with a first time hood in public, and he came through really nicely to run down his stable companion La Barossa. And afterwards Charlie Appleby was saying that La Barossa, the race hadn't exactly gone to plan, so they might actually end up Godolphin from the Appleby stable with three runners in the 2,000 guineas, because of course there's also one ruler who won the Autumn Stakes last season, perceived to be unlucky when second in the Vertebra Futurity. And interestingly, Charlie Appleby said yesterday that that performance in the Craven for Master of the Seas suggests to him that he thinks William Buick would find it very difficult to get off him for one of the stable companions in the guineas itself.
Well, Charlie Appleby joins me now. Charlie, that's a productive few days at the Craven meeting. Did you think you had the horses quite well forward?
I thought that they were in good condition. They've wintered well, and you know, they were nice horses with the profiles that were ready to take the next step forward and to see where we are. I mean, as respects to the two horses, obviously La Barossa and Master of the Seas, you know, they both had good two-year-old form. Obviously we'd seen Master of the Seas there at Maidan, but you know, as respects to where they sat yesterday going into the Craven, they had to go and show their wellness and have they done what we hope they've done during the course of the winter, and thankfully they've both gone and ticked those boxes.
I mean, this is quite an interesting one, because quite often at the Craven meeting, if somebody does really well, we get quite excited, and then obviously the season unravels and develops in a different way. So I guess the question to you is it a phony war, or do you think you've just got better troops this year? Have you got a depth of troops in that classic division?
Well, if we step up to the classic division, it'll be another question to be answered, really. I've always felt that the two turning three-year-olds were, I had more strength than we were hoping. We had more strength and depth there than past years. And I just think, as respects to going into the classic division, you know, it's a year when you've got, you know, a 4-1 favourite for the guineas, you know, 4-1 bar the rest. You just know that there's not, you know, over the past few years, there's normally been an odds-on shot or a short price favourite for the guineas, should we say. So it's not saying it's an open year, but everybody's sort of just trying to find their feet here in the spring there and see what sort of class of horse they've got going forward. And I'm in a very happy position where we are, that I feel that we've got some nice horses. They're doing what's been asked of them so far, and each stepping stone we keep asking them, they've managed to give us the right results. So Very much looking forward to the classics for sure.
I mean, do you think Master of the Seas has earned his position in the pecking order now ahead of One Ruler after what you saw from Master of the Seas on the track yesterday and One Ruler in his piece of work on the track?
You can't, obviously, you can never beat going into a trial and doing what Master of the Seas has gone and done. You know, as respects to their 2-year-old form, they both have got, you know, good solid 2-year-old form. As we know, One Ruler took his broke his maiden on his second start there, and then sort of went on to win the Autumn Stakes and finished second in the Racing Post Trophy. So two good sort of winter trial races to go into the winter with the Autumn Stakes and the Racing Post Trophy form behind him. As respects to Master of the Seas, and he broke his maiden well and with form that worked out well, and then subsequently went on to win the Superlative in good style, and then met with the setback there in the National Stakes. But there were two colts going into the winter that had nice and respectable 2-year-old form. One's come out and proven himself already on the track, and I think that's probably takes the advantage over One Ruler because he's gone and done it. We're very pleased with One Ruler, as it's been documented now. He's had 2 race course gallops there at Chelmsford and at Newmarket, and he's pleased us on both occasions. But one's going to have done it on the track, and one's got to go and do it on the track. So that's the only way I can split them, really.
Yeah. Hand on heart, looking further down the track, do you see their paths diverging as the season goes on? Do you see one going in one direction and one going in the other, distance-wise and et cetera?
But obviously, both have got a bit of a page there. Where they say they could step up to the 10. And you could probably make a case that one could step up a bit further. But as we see them at the moment, they're both very natural pace horses. For sure, obviously, like I say, Master of the Seas has gone and done it already over the mile there in the Craven this year. Visually looking at One Ruler, the mile is most definitely the right starting point for him this year. Where we go beyond that, I'll be honest with you, it's just like everyone's their mind is very much focused on the guineas for the moment, and beyond that, well, we'll see what transpires after the guineas, really.
Sure. So not necessarily might be the answer to that question. I loved Highland Avenue the other day. I really did, and so did the Racing Post ratings guys, by the looks of it. What's going to happen to him now?
I'm going to probably go the slightly softer route with him. Because he's a horse that, as I say, he came to hand later in his 2-year-old career there, and had the one run before Christmas there, and has 2 starts after Christmas. So he's not been kept busy, but he's been active during the winter. We were delighted with that performance, and it's a performance that we were hopeful of there in the field. And but as an individual, he's still a big baby. So I would be reluctant to throw him into the deep end just yet. So we might just look at something about perhaps going towards the Heron there and taking a penalty in the Heron and just giving him a bit more experience before we start to raise the bar for him.
Charlie Appleby there. Lydia is still with me. What would you do if you were William Buick? Who would you rate as the clubhouse leader for Godolphin at the moment?
I think Master of the Seas, I think he's got that innate brilliance, and as long as that you can channel that energy, he does have star quality. I think the others are good horses, and could yet develop into be better 3-year-olds. And obviously, we're not going to see One Ruler until the 2000 guineas itself, so it's a little bit harder maybe to judge where he is. They seem to be very keen on him, but there is an element of brilliance about Master of the Seas. We saw that in the Superlative last year. We even saw it, although he pulled his chance away in the National Stakes, and I thought he did well yesterday in a decent field for the Craven.
Are Godolphin on the march, or was this a phony war, do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I think they're increasingly far more reliable than they had been. If you think back to sort of five years ago, I do think that in general they've got a good bunch of horses that are able to compete at the highest level. But of course, it tends to be a phony war at the Craven meeting, doesn't it, with Aidan O'Brien. It tends to be sighters that Aidan O'Brien is sending over for those kind of races. So, you know, the likes of Sandhurst, the likes of Khartoum, who I'm sure will develop into good horses. Khartoum was far too free yesterday, for example. But you don't think that they're going to be their Guineas candidates.
The only observation I would make is that they might have been sighters, but would you not like to have seen a few of them, say, finish second and run well?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a very valid point. I'm not sure whether... I mean, this is always a very foolish thing to say about Ballydoyle, isn't it? I'm not sure that necessarily there is the immediate... I don't think this is one of those years where you're kind of like, OK, that's the Guineas winner. Or do you know what I mean? That kind of horse that Ballydoyle are sending over. I thought it was... There was a suggestion of that in the two-year-old races of last year. And maybe that sort of that will follow through. I mean, I still like Battleground. I know he got beaten in Keeneland in the Breeders' Cup, but only, by Fire at Will. But I still like him. I think he could develop into a very good horse.
And he's bred to be a very good horse as well by Warfront Out of Found. And you rather hope with that pedigree that he takes after the dam side of his pedigree in terms of longevity rather than the top side of it.
Mm, very much so. It speaks well of him that he was able to go out to the Breeders' Cup and perform to some degree. I mean, he was not too far off his Vintage Stakes performance there. And hopefully he will be able to build on that. And you would think he would, of course. You know, he found his dam was very sturdy and reliable, as you've just said. But that was the one I was looking to as being the horse from Ballydoyle who had shown a high level of form as a two-year-old and would definitely go on as a three-year-old. There might be some more unexposed horses knocking around. There probably are. But I think your essential point is right. When you send sighters over, ideally you'd like them... ideally you'd like them winning. but you'd certainly like them to be, you know, roughing up the horses, the best horses over here.
The Nell Gwynn, do you want a quick line on that? We spoke about it yesterday. We spoke to Philippa Cooper, who owned and bred the third horse home, Love Is You, who I thought might be the one to take out of it, but she said she probably won't run if the ground's still quick.
Yes, I can see that. I can see that. Maybe she might like a bit more curse. I certainly didn't think she liked the track that much. It was interesting that Jane Chapel Hyam seemed to be very keen on Saffron Beach. She obviously unleashed another filly yesterday, Belosa, who had been well backed overnight and dotted up in a maiden. But Saffron Beach remains on track for the Nell Gwynn. And, you know, Sacred surprised me. I wasn't necessarily sure that this was the kind of trip that she wanted, 7 furlongs even, and obviously she's got to prove herself over a furlong further. But that camp seems to be pretty confident that she will. The Tentai was recommended by Ted Durkin when he was riding work for William Haggis. That seemed to have worked. And maybe it was just maturity that meant she wasn't quite seeing out her races as a two-year-old, rather than her being sharp, which is what I thought she was.
Talk of Jane Chapel Hyam's winner yesterday. I was watching on from Cheltenham and I kept going, what is that? And then realised she'd been back from 25s into 7-2 joint favourite in the Marling and Marwell colours of Sir Edmund Loader, and won by 7. How many horses win a maiden of any sort at the Rowley Mile, however good or bad you think the strength of the race is, by 7 or more? I bet if you had a list of them, they'd all be either household names or horses you knew about.
Definitely. I think she's a talented horse, and it's clear that Jane Chapel Hyam and the team knew what they had. It'll be interesting what they do with her next, because obviously she went over 7 furlongs, but she killed the race with speed. I suspect she'll be just as effective, if not more effective, over 6.
Okay, so what cards are there to play classic-wise for the rest of this week? We've got the postponed Greenham and Fred Darling on Sunday at Newbury.
Yes, we have. And are you there for Racing TV on that day?
Yeah, I am, yeah.
Well, it looks like it's going to be an excellent day, I think. You'd spoken to Angus Gold about Alchemate and what his chances might be. It'd be Marcus Tregoning thinking that he could stretch out to being a miler rather than a sprinter. I suspect he's a sprinter.
Yeah, Angus Gold wasn't in much doubt, was he?
No, he really wasn't. He really wasn't. There's Chindit, I suppose, who was progressing forward very nicely until disappointing in soft ground in the Dewhurst. So he's going to be interesting as well. Nando Parado, the Coventry Stakes winner, who does like a little bit of cut. And whether or not he's going to get it, I don't think it'll be a disadvantage to him, but he might not have the advantage that he seems to like. So that looks like an interesting race. And this, obviously, you've got some very unexposed horses as well in the field. Is there anything you like?
I would say at this stage, for the 2,000 guineas, I'm actually most interested in the Godolphin horses. So the one we saw yesterday, Master of the Seas, who I loved when he won the Superlative, and then I fell into my own trap of forgetting about him, which really annoyed me, having banged on about him relentlessly before his defeat in the National Stakes. And One Ruler. I think those are the two who have the strongest credentials at this point. I'm very excited to see Thunder Moon as well. Whether he quite gets a stiff mile, we won't know yet. But I thought he was the 2-year-old last year on fast ground who showed the most brilliance.
Yes, I think that he might struggle to see the mile out, stiff or otherwise.
Okay, well, so that's the question. I do think he's a horse of abundant talent, however. I think he's a more talented horse than St. Mark's Basilica or Wembley, but I remain to be proved wrong. I want to talk to you about the handicapping system, because there's one or two articles in the press about it today. Keith Melrose has written a lengthy piece in the Racing Post about the Irish-English handicapping differential, and it's clearly the case that the BHA is now starting to review its processes in the wake of the one-sided results at Cheltenham and in the Grand National.
Yes, it can't just be handicapping, though, can it? I mean, it's not like it's just the handicaps that the Irish were dominant in, and thereby lies the key, I think. I think they have a better body of horses at the top end, and that is where things start to happen. Now, Keith Melrose in the Racing Post today quotes Kevin Barons of RegOp, which specialises in economic consultancy and data analysis, and they've conducted a study in the wake of the Cheltenham Festival. I have to confess that Kevin sent me his study last Friday, and I haven't yet read it, much to my chagrin. I had meant to do that this weekend, I've just been a bit too busy. Anyway, Keith has summarised it in his column for the Racing Post, and Kevin Barons has found that the medians over hurdles are markedly different in actuality compared with what the BHA handicappers believed. So a British hurdler, the median hurdler, is rated £7 higher than their Irish equivalent, not £4 to £5 as the British handicappers had believed. They're quoted as saying that. Andrew Emilio said it on the handicapper special that we did for Road to Cheltenham. And Kevin Barons has also found that the distribution is different amongst hurdlers. In Britain, with that discrete population, there is a pretty normal distribution, as you would expect. But in Ireland, there are significantly more horses below the mean than above. And so that means that when you merge those two groups, comparatively, there is a large glut of horses in Britain that are rated 117 to 140. But what that means is that, so let's take a hypothetical 5-length winner in Britain who gets a treatment from the handicapper. Now, that might be the rise that he gets might be discreetly correct within Britain. But then if you compare that to a 5-length winner in a same 0-135, let's say, handicap in Ireland, who gets exactly the same treatment from that response from the handicapper, and that is discreetly correct. When you bring those two populations together, actually the Irish horse has achieved more, because it is beating horses, very good horses, in large fields with a depth of quality to those fields. Whereas in Britain, whilst it's discreetly working, there is a perpetuation of horses becoming inflated. In short, the races that they're winning are intrinsically worthless in terms of actual form than the same races in Ireland. And so you get a perpetuation, an extrapolation of inflated handicap marks in Britain, whereas Ireland is working quite well. But you only know that when the two populations are brought together. And of course, this season, we've had much, much less of that because of COVID.
I don't want to sound condescending, but pre 9 o'clock, that was outstanding. I mean,
well, the explanation.
So good, so good. Donald McCain yesterday at Cheltenham. There's no segue there. I'm just pivoting. Donald McCain yesterday at Cheltenham suggested that Brian Hughes was now David to Harry Skelton's Goliath in the race for the jockey's title, which was an entertaining and a novel, a hot take.
But so he's having the skeletons as Goliath.
Correct.
Right. Okay. I mean, you know, I think it's a pretty fair fight, isn't it?
Well, I think his point was that when he, I think the quote was, when you're reeling in the likes of Paul Nichols to help you out, etc., etc.
Right. I mean, you know, trainers' titles, jockeys' titles, does funny things to people, doesn't it? Over time, and you know, you do call on all available resources. That's just the way it is. That's how it happens. And you know, I'm sure Brian has been calling in favours and calling in contacts in the same kind of way. That is just what the lie of the land is. Interesting is the best way I can respond to that.
Anyway, there's two in it, and I don't think it's completely game over, and the roadshow will roll on to air, on which note, the Scottish Grand National this weekend, I feel has rather been, I don't know, I feel it's sort of been swamped, really. It's sort of passing me by, and I feel like we ought to give it a bit more love quickly.
Yeah, I think that's right. I feel the same way, and it's a great race. I really, really enjoy the Colwell Scottish Grand National. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to I Wright, obviously, running really well. It would be great after the season he has had if I Wright could manage to win the Scottish Grand National. I know that Harriet Graham has targeted him at the race. He's obviously run a series of excellent races, you know, second in the Ladbrokes Trophy, second behind Taking Risks in the Sky Bet, third in the Ultima, and he shapes as though he will stay. He's going to like that flat track, I think. So I think clearly he's a big player. I expect Soldier of Love to run a big race. I think he is unexposed over an extended trip. I think he wants it. He must have a sound surface. That is an absolute imperative for him, so he will enjoy that ground. But whilst I think he will run well at a good price, I will be cheering I Wright.
I think the hopes not only of Scotland, but the hopes of England really rest with I Wright this weekend, because I think he's a horse that everybody will be rooting for so many different reasons. Harriet Graham, his trainer, is with me now. Harriet, how are things going?
Yeah, great. We've literally got off him from giving him a little spin up the hill, up the Cheviots here. We're obviously very excited about Sunday, and I'm really chuffed with all the support we're getting. You know, we have worries of, you know, he's top weight and he's favourites. Statistics say that's not a very good place to be in the Scottish National. But, you know, it's great to be there, and we are very excited.
And, you know, he's favourite for a reason. He's been so consistent in all these top-class chases. How copper-bottom do you think his stamina is for 4 miles and a bit?
There's the question. You know, I mean, until you actually run them in a race over that distance, you don't know. But everything, the way he runs and the way he recovers quickly after the race and everything, really points that he really will stay. But, and you know, we can't duplicate that at home. We can't work out whether he will or not. And, you know, a race is a totally different place. And I guess we'll know that by 4 o'clock on Sunday.
We will indeed, of course. And yeah, it's a big day for you. It's a big day for your jockey as well. It's difficult to overstate the significance of this. Just try and tell us what it would mean if this horse could win one of these huge prizes, particularly this one in Scotland.
I mean, it would be really sweet if it happened in Scotland, because, I mean, Jeff Adams and Elspeth Adams, who are the owners of the horse, they, you know, they live in Melrose. They've had horses. They kept them trained in Scotland with a small trainer, a Scottish jockey who was brought up a few miles away from here. I'm probably the most English part of the equation. The horse was bought from somebody within Scotland. He wasn't actually bred here, but you know, it's a real Scottish connection. And we live in a very rural area, in a very horsey area, and everybody is kind of following him. And yeah, it would be very, very, it would be fantastic. But let's not get ahead of ourselves.
No, we're not getting ahead of ourselves. We're keeping it real. Harriet, very best of luck. Thanks for talking to me.
Thank you, Nick. Cheers. Bye.
Bye. Bye. All right, so it's Friday, so it's time for our latest update on where the world's best horses sit in the Thoroughbred Racing Commentary Global Rankings in conjunction with James Willoughby, from whom we will hear in a few moments' time. These are active racehorses, so horses that have not yet headed into retirement and we are likely to see for the rest of 2021. So at 10, Monomoy Girl. What sort of campaign could she have and when will she take on the males? 9 is Essential Quality, the favourite for the Kentucky Derby. 8 is Very Elegant, who got that verdict back over a day, but it's the rematch this weekend. 7 and a new entry into the top 10 is Nature Strip. 6 Chronogenesis for Japan, and 5 the compatriot Gran Allegria. 4 is Contrail, Japan's highest rated horse in the top 10 at present, the Triple Crown winner from last year. 3 is Tarnawa for Dermot Weld and His Highness the Aga Khan. 2 is Mishriff the Globetrotter, and at 1 Hong Kong Superstar Golden 6. James Willoughby is with me. James, there's going to be a few movers and shakers quite soon, I would have thought.
Yeah, the season's really getting underway now globally. Australia is staging the championships at the moment. In Europe, we're seeing classic trials and the older horses beginning to reappear. In America, the Kentucky Derby trial is really beginning to focus attention on the best three-year-olds over there. And in Japan, the top-notch horses that appear near the top of our rankings are beginning to assemble for some very big races. So it's a very key time of year, Nick.
Rematch between a Dave and Very Elegant. They're 1-1 at the moment. That's going to happen this weekend. Who do you expect to come out on top?
Very Elegant. I thought she won that with a good deal in hand last time, their clash last time. And I think that she is a mare, as I spoke last time on the show, who's improving, as Chris Waller horses tend to do, with time. And her Randvet win was really impressive, I thought, and value for more. And Dave, when he cornered in that race, he looked beaten already. Now, maybe the race will sharpen him up. Maybe he'll be more of a threat this time to Very Elegant. But she's getting better and better and better. And at one stage, I thought talk of the Arga Triomphe was pie in the sky. But I'm beginning to think that she's a realistic prospect for that race. She travels so well.
That would be quite something. And 6 out of this top 10 are Eastern Hemisphere based at the moment. Should we read anything into that?
Yeah, we should. That represents the hierarchy of TRC global rankings, represents clashes between horses all around the world. It's a giant network of results, so that it's not an exercise in playing with numbers, but really reflects how top-class races have gone. And wherever Japanese horses have gone, they have won or run extremely well. And while that used to be true of British horses, and there are still sort of pockets of form like American turf races and French group races where British horses can chip and do well, Mishriff's performance recently in Saudi Arabia was a bit of an exception, I would say, in that he proved himself to be a genuine top-notch horse. I was not a believer necessarily in Gayath at the same extent as many others. And it's the horses in the East with their tremendously competitive racing. That is the key, in my opinion. It's the same thing that has been levelled against British racing over jumps, which is, I just don't think the races, the pattern races held in Britain, are really all that competitive in many instances. But if you follow Japanese racing and Hong Kong racing, you will be very familiar with just how good and how packed with top horses their leading group ones are. And so I really think that we're seeing now a period where horses from the East will just get better and better and better, because the breeding program, particularly in Japan, is flourishing and thriving, and it's based on one thing. And I'm sorry to sound like a sore from the past, but it's based on stamina. Stamina is a very useful asset at every distance. Some of the stallions, in my opinion, that populate two-year-old racing over here don't really deserve to even be at stud. They're just not that good compared to the top horses in Japan. Japanese breeding is so good that a stallion like Agnes World, the former July Cup winner, who was first of all shuttled and then moved abroad to Brazil, now he absolutely dominated the Brazilian classics. He had, I think, the first 2, 1, 2, and 4, and 1, 2, 3, and 6 in the Derby and Oaks over there. And whilst people in Europe might say, oh, well, so what? It shows the strength of Japanese bloodstock, and that's the difference. That's what powered the jumping results. That's what powered the flat results. That's what powers results in all codes, in all countries. It's pedigrees, superiority of pedigrees and breeding. And at the moment, in my opinion, Japanese bloodstock is better than it's ever been, and the cupboard is extremely well stocked for the future too.
There are, however, four horses Western Hemisphere trained who are in this top 10. One of those is Essential Quality, who has already got himself up into 9 ahead of the Kentucky Derby. How confident are you that he's going to win that?
We can never be confident because of the nature of that particular race. But I'm very confident he's the best horse. And again, to stress, TRC Global Rankings and TRC Computer Race Ratings, which power them, are an objective measure of ability because humans are not involved. Human handicappers can contrive to make populations of horses much higher or lower than they really are. And that's something which the jumping in Britain and Ireland is now thrown up as a talking point. But TRC computer race ratings are done by a computer. The computer has no biases. It simply looks at the results, compares when horses ship from one country to another, it compares the strengths of racing in those two countries via the results. And at the moment, it's telling a story that anybody who logs on to thoroughbredracing.com and accesses our rankings in all the categories, not just horses, but sires, trainers, jockeys and owners and well, they can see that story played out every week. And it's a very familiar one now.
James, briefly, because we're short of a little bit of time, this week's Craven meeting, you've been doing sectional analysis for Racing TV. I've been really enjoying your work this week. Tell the Daily Podcast listeners who has made the most striking impression on you.
Well, it's the Craven meeting, so let's talk about the Craven Stakes. And it was an unusual race that Master of the Seas won in terms of sectionals. The field dawdled down to the two pole, and he was locked up in behind, and he couldn't get out. And he was only hooked out and asked to accelerate by William Buick inside the two. From that point on, he did something really unusual. As Buick himself described, he accelerated not once, but twice. And the second time, running up the hill. His last two furlongs were 12.06, 11.74. So he went faster up the hill in the final furlong than down the hill in the penultimate furlong, and that was because the race as a time trial was completely messed up by the pace. And so this was a very interesting application of sectionals, and one that suggests to me that William Buick should stay on Master of the Seas for the Guineas. There's been conjecture about other possibilities he might entertain, but this was a high-class and unusual performance featuring a remarkable turn of foot from the horse. One that could well carry him to 2,000 guineas glory next time.
Thank you to James and to all my guests today. Lydia is still with me. And interesting, Lydia, that James, based on his sectional analysis of yesterday, is firmly of the view that William Buick should be riding at Master of the Seas in the guineas, which sort of rounds us off exactly where we started this podcast.
Yes, yeah, that's good. That's good to hear. And there is that sort of flash of brilliance from him, and it's good to hear some analysis, some sectional analysis that backs that up.
And also his point, which he has come back to. I know he said, I sound like a broken record, but I suspect we're going to get it a few more times during the course of this summer. And I know it's something you picked up on last week about the fact that there's 6 out of the top 10 horses in the TRC Global Rankings are currently in the Eastern Hemisphere, but that stamina is critical to their breeding operations. And we heard it again from Andreas Jacobs earlier in the week as well when we were talking to him.
Yeah, and I think that it is so significant, listening to Andreas and the points that we've all made about Japanese racing. And I really do hope that Europe sort of sits up and take notice, because we're meant to be the home of the middle distance horse, whereas more recently there's been a focus on cheap speed and a sort of, you know, get them turned over quickly, get them out, get them acting as 2-year-olds, that kind of thing. The point about middle distance horses that Japan want and that Germany want is that they are sturdy. a horse that you see racing season in, season out, you know is sound. You know that the competition at a middle distance level is still very, very strong in Europe. It leads the way. So you're talking about quality horses. And, you know, Zowie, quality horses are the best to breed from.
Could you give me a quality horse for this afternoon, please?
I would like to. I'm actually going to give you a couple at big prices. The first one is Koeman in the 215 at Newbury. He is a big price. He's stepping up to 2 miles for the first time on turf. I know he likes the track at Newbury. What he needs is a flat track and not any sort of whiff of soft in the going description. So I think he will like today. He is a sort of a begrudging course. He only gives when he's asked. Sheen Murphy is on board. I think he could run a really big race up to 2 miles. I think he might well stay it now. Clearly, there's Al Miguar in the race, so you know he's going to have to be very good. But I think Koeman is on a reasonable mark. And the other one I'm interested in, and I think the race might just be a little bit too hot, but that is First Lot in the Dubai Duty Free Full of Surprises Handicap at 250. She ran an excellent race at Chelmsford City, at Lingfield last time out, where she didn't get the run of things. It was a race dominated from the front, and when she was trying to make ground late on, she ran into trouble. But she was giving weight away all round, and she shaped both occasions that she's run the last twice as though she'd do better, stepped back up to 7 furlongs. So I think she could go well at a big price under Jane Elliott for Tom Dascombe.
Lydia, thank you very much. Thank you very much for listening. That was Friday, April the 16th. We'll be back to do it all over again on Monday. You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with Fitzdares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.